Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Today on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with Michael Hernan. He's Vice President of Advancement at Franciscan University of Steubenville about the university's decision to drop students from its healthcare program. And in the second half, Tim talks with Ruben Quesada about his book, For Greater Glory, The True Story of Christiada. It's the companion book to the film that opens this weekend. And welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello, Tim.
It is good to be with you, Tom.
And with you, my friend. You know, it seems to me that the decision by a university, any university, to drop students from its health plan is a pretty radical move.
Yeah, you would think so, Tom. But not surprisingly, there, you know, lawsuits by Catholic organizations continue to be filed against the federal government for the Department of Health and Human Services contraceptive mandate. And just over a week ago, Franciscan University of Steubenville in Ohio became the first Catholic university to drop students from its healthcare program because of the mandate. To learn more about that decision, Michael Hernan, who's Vice President of Advancement at Franciscan University, is joining us. Thanks for being with us on Register Radio, Michael.
Tim, it is a pleasure to be with you and on Register Radio.
Great. So first of all, Michael, tell us, when did Franciscan make this decision and notify students and parents that they were dropping this portion of the health coverage?
Sure. What we did was back in mid-April, we announced to our parents and our students that we'd no longer be requiring that they have health insurance. They always, the students always paid for it, but in light of the HHS mandate, and also for us, there was a new cost that was going to be passed on to the students. We told them in mid-April that we would no longer be requiring that they have health insurance, but we're it was a kind of a sad decision for us to come to because we've been requiring and providing for this for ages now.
Sure. So why exactly was Franciscan compelled to make this decision? It sounds like part of it was monetary.
That's right. That's right. It was both a moral with the looming HHS mandate that was already putting us on guard. And then in March, we found out from our health insurance provider that the students' costs would actually be doubled. And this was based on the requirements that were new coverage limits that were laid out in the Affordable Care Act. And for us, we didn't think we could be complicit with doubling the cost for our students in these really kind of challenging economic times.
But let's just be clear about that, because it isn't just doubling the cost. And if I understand the Affordable Care Act correctly, if a plan were provided for the students under the rules of the new health care bill, wouldn't it require coverage for things such as abortion-inducing drugs, contraceptives, and other health care that's in opposition to Catholic teaching?
That's 100% correct. And there is no exemption for student plans. And so all college student plans, and that's one of the intentions they had when they announced it in August. They wanted to make this impact students sooner and faster. And we said, enough's enough. We can't abide by that. And our students have been overwhelmingly supportive of that. They've actually led some rallies and protests on the HHS mandate. So it was no surprise to us that we received really a great support from parents and students when we announced we're no longer going to be providing and requiring student health coverage.
Okay. I want to remind listeners that you are listening to Register Radio. I am Tim Drake, and we are speaking with Michael Hernan, who works at Franciscan University of Steubenville. We are talking about Franciscan's decision to drop students' coverage, healthcare coverage at the university. One of the other questions I had, Michael, is because I'm not exactly sure how this works at Steubenville, but I remember my college days, and we had a clinic, if you will, on campus, you know, that we could go to if we we're feeling sick. Is there something like that at Franciscan? Where is it that students go if they need health care?
Yeah, we do have a clinic that's essentially free for students. And we have a nurse practitioner. They're able to provide all the basic health care needs that they have, and do it in a very affordable, whether you have insurance or not, making it very reasonable. $5, I believe, is all that they charge for any of their services there. Now, the problem would be is that we encourage students to have health coverage if they need to go get an X-ray or if there are other things that come up. Now, our athletes are still required to cover an athletic insurance plan, but that doesn't provide for anything other than athletic injuries, so there is no immoral mandate as part of that. This issue, Tim, is definitely going to be coming up for a lot of other institutions, both Catholic and other Christian institutions that have entered into a lawsuit because of this. And this is really, we didn't realize it, but we're really the first casualty, and really our students are the first casualties of this mandate.
I wanted to draw attention to that lawsuit because it was about a week after Franciscan made the initial decision about healthcare coverage that Franciscan University was also one of 43 different Catholic organizations that filed a lawsuit against the federal government to strike down the HHS mandate. And so I wanted to, at its heart, really, this isn't about contraceptive coverage. It's really right. About a Catholic organization's right to religious freedom, isn't it?
That's right. And, you know, we're a very passionate Catholic university. We were the first Catholic university to take the oath of fidelity, saying we'll only teach what the magisterium teaches. And whether it's in the sciences, whether it's in theology or philosophy, we're teaching consistent with the Catholic Church. How could the government tell us what we teach in the classroom isn't something that we can practice when we use our resources? All we're asking for is the freedom to live the faith that we believe. The fundamental question for the lawsuit and just allowing us to be Catholic. That's all we're asking for.
You wouldn't think that would be too much to ask. And I understand that Ave Maria University followed suit by also dropping its student health care plan. Are you aware of any other Catholic colleges or universities that may be doing likewise?
I am not at this time, but they came within a week after they heard about our decision. I believe there will be others as this comes out. And for both, I think, from what I understand, both from Abe, they made it the same decision as we did. There was both a moral and an economic issue that was just made it impossible and impractical for them to continue, you know, on this course. I know it's going to happen in other places. I've even heard about other Christian schools that that, you know, don't necessarily agree with all the Catholic Church's teaching, but are entering it because of the drugs that cause abortion, the abortifacients that are coming into this. But it's interesting enough, I've even heard from other ministers who say, we disagree with the Catholic Church on contraception, but we believe this is a religious liberty issue, and we're standing with you. So too many people try to make it the contraceptive mandate, or that's what's popularly in the media. It really is much more fundamentally a religious liberty issue. And I hope that people, your listeners, have heard that, I know, numerous times, but that's really important. That's why it affects not just Catholics or even Christians, but really all Americans.
Michael, it's Tom Price here. How difficult is this to get across? I think the listeners to Register Radio, the people who go to EWTN.com and listen to Catholic radio and television, they understand that this is not about contraception. It is really about religious liberty, but the mainstream media doesn't seem to be getting that.
Yeah, well, I was shocked to see some of the reports how ABC, CBS, and NBC actually didn't cover it. I think it was maybe 19 seconds on CBS. New York Times, I think, put it on page 19 when the lawsuit was filed. To my knowledge, it was the most historic lawsuit against the federal government in our history, definitely on the religious liberty grounds, at least. And it is being silenced by a lot of folks in the media. And so it is challenging to get it out there. And when you only have one side, if you will, of the argument, it's really difficult for us. But one of the things that the First Amendment is both the freedom of religion, but also it's freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And so I think we need to make sure that we are always making our voices heard as Catholics in an articulate and effective way. It's just a great teaching moment for us. We may have fallen short as a church before in really teaching the beauty of, Pope John Paul's, theology of the body and the understanding of real, true life and family issues. But this is also, at the very core, a religious liberty issue that I think even people who disagree say, hey, we'll support you and your ability to follow your faith, why won't you let us follow ours? I think that's an argument that it's hard as an American to disagree with, that all we want is our liberty to use our funds and resources in ways that we deem morally appropriate.
Yeah. And, Michael, just so we're clear on this, how many students does Steubenville have total, and then how many students are you saying this would affect in terms of how many had been purchasing health care insurance prior to this decision?
Yeah, sure. So we have roughly 2,500 students that are enrolled at the university, and less than 10% were on this plan. So probably even less than 200 or so that were actually buying into this. Most of them were covered by their family or other plans. So it was a small number of students, but mm-hmm. it's still something that, you know, we're talking about healthcare, and particularly as Catholics who were the pioneers of healthcare, we do it because of our faith, and now they're trying to separate our faith from our service, and particularly our healthcare, which, I mean, how many Catholic hospitals and religious orders have started hospitals? It's amazing that they're attacking in this way.
Yeah. And, Michael, my last question would be, this impacts the students, but what about the university's policy for employees? What is it that the university intends to do when this law takes effect in terms of the policy that's offered for employees?
Yes, well, we have fought this both legislatively, hoping that even that might still be possible, but we've entered into the lawsuit because we believe we need to find justice to be served and to have our day in court, if you will. And we're hoping that we might be able to get an injunction to stop this law from actually impacting us and others. But we have a safe harbor of a year from this coming August to fight this. And we're hoping that in that year's time, cooler minds will prevail. And, you know, the president said when he was at Notre Dame that he wanted a reasonable and sensible conscience clause. That's what we're looking for, a conscience clause. And we hope and pray, and we'll do everything in our power to make that happen. And hopefully we never have to get to it, the point in the next year or so where we have to choose between our faith and our health care, because we at the university will not comply and will always choose our faith.
That's right. And we are at EWTN are just so thankful that there are other Catholic organizations on board in terms of the lawsuit. And I want to just thank you, Michael, for taking the time to be with us today on Register Radio.
Great. It was a pleasure being with both of you, and have a wonderful day. And please continue to pray and make sure people are speaking up on this issue. It's very, very important. Thank you for all you're doing.
And my thanks as well, Michael. When we return, we'll talk about the companion book that goes with a movie getting plenty of buzz even before it opens this weekend. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner, or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. And Tim, we're delighted to have Ruben Quesada on with us to talk about the Mexican Cristero Rebellion. Now, this is something that very few people have even heard about these days, but the repercussions of that rebellion are felt even today here in the U.S.
Yes, that's right, Tom. The Cristero Rebellion actually led to the first wave of Mexican immigration into the United States. And this weekend across the country, the film For Greater Glory opens in theaters. The film tells the little-known story of the Mexican Cristero Rebellion, which took place against a government that was trying to suppress the church. Ruben Quesada is director of the Catholic Resource Center and the author of For Greater Glory, The True Story of Cristiada, a companion book to the movie. Ruben, thanks for joining us on Register Radio today.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It really is an honor and a blessing to be here, so thank you all.
So first of all, Ruben, you've seen the film, correct?
I have, actually. I've seen it. I've been at quite a few previews, and last night, actually, I had the privilege of being at the Beverly Hills grand premiere with the entire cast. It's phenomenal.
It's fantastic. So how accurate is the film when compared to what actually happened in Mexico?
You know, the film is pretty much accurate on depicting what went on from both, you know, the government side and the Cristeros and the Catholic League and the bishops, you know, behind the scenes on that, trying to get this law repealed. You know, there was some artistic freedom they used to create certain characters or relationships. So I would say about 95% accurate.
How many people died during the Cristero War?
Yes, the research I've been doing for over 12 to 14 years now, and I've found various accounts, there was approximately 90,000 lives lost during the persecution.
What percentage of those 90,000 lives were government soldiers versus those in the Cristero Rebellion?
That's a very good question. It's amazing to know that the biggest part of those casualties came from the government, from the federales. And at the end of the war, it is estimated that approximately 25,000 to 30,000 Cristeros perished, where the rest of them, of course, anywhere between 65,000 for the federal government. So, you know, the Mexican government had a larger army. It had more power, weapons, and, of course, the support of the U.S. as well during this persecution.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that was surprising to me in watching the film was the U.S. involvement aiding the Mexican government. Why is it that so few people know about this?
In the mid-90s, when I started doing a deeper research into this, and well, that's when I really found out more about this entire war, because I had only heard about certain martyrs, like one of my favorite icons, Blessed Miguel Pro and Blessed Anacleto. I started doing more research, and through the research of their lives, I found out about this persecution. And it was funny because, you know, I mean, I grew up in Mexico up until I was in fourth, fifth grade, and I recall nothing of that was in the history books. So it just left me quite a bit perplexed about that. And as I read more about it, I just, you know, to what degree this persecution had grown. I mean, a three-year war, and it pretty much covered the entire country, and none of this to be in the history books. Well, that was a little bit of a little deeper research I needed to do. It was just something, the curiosity, of course, got the best of me. And I started finding out that the reason why this was taken out of the history books was that this persecution eventually became embarrassing. It was an embarrassment to the government. This chapter wanted to erase this from its history, from the history books. And of course, they take it away from the... They take it off the history books, and eventually it gets lost in many people's minds. And that's exactly how this came to be because, I mean, I think it's more amazing to realize is that more people today, especially, you know, Mexican nationals, know very little about this. And to prove that, there's two things. Two nights ago, I was at a local parish here in Los Angeles giving a lecture. There was, I would say, approximately 250 people there, and most of them either from Mexico directly or, you know, maybe a second generation. I always ask, just out of curiosity, how many of you present have heard about this persecution? And out of 250 people, only about 10 hands went up in the air. And that's just, you know, what an incredible job the government had done to erase this, you know. And you're talking about generations who never grew up, you know, reading about this. And the only people that did know about this were those who were closely related to either family members were in the war, were part of the Cristeros and so forth, and, you know, it's just passed on those stories, you know, in generations to come. But other than that, it just, you know, even nowadays, there's a very small mention of this whole Cristero War in the history books. Maybe you'll find a sentence or two, but it's very, very minimal. That's why very few people even know about this chapter, or those who heard about it must have been, you know, just by a quick comment by either a grandparent or a great-grandparent before they passed away. And that's it. They never really look deeper into it. So,
and I want to remind listeners that you are listening to Register Radio. My name is Tim Drake, and we are speaking with Ruben Quesada, who is the author of For Greater Glory, The True Story of Christiada, the companion book to the film For Greater Glory, which opens in theaters this weekend. Ruben, why do you think that this is an important story for us to know?
Well, it is. It's very timely. Divine providence that we have this kind of film out nowadays, because, you know, it's not just because what's going on here in the States with this this religious freedom attack that we're being faced with right now, you know, and something that we all need to stand up and really voice our opinion out as to what our religious freedom, you know, and fight for it. But also, you know, even people in Mexico, because the persecution down there is still continuing. You know, it's something that it rarely gets talked about or published, you know, in newspapers, but it is still ongoing, you know, and under this current president Calderon in Mexico, there's been, you know, quite a few priests executed, but it's, again, you know, the press is incredibly covers it. There's been thousands of priests that have been, you know, they live under extortion, and some of them have left the country. So, you know, you stop and think about, well, is it really happening? I said, yeah, you know, and I tell people, yes, it is happening. It's something that we need to really look at with the eyes of a true Christian, a true Catholic, because it is our responsibility. You know, freedom is our lives. Freedom is our God-given right, and we can't, you know, there's a great line that I love from the film, and I think you remember it. It's from Father Vega, and Father Vega says, we cannot allow the godless to take away our freedom. And that needs to be in the hearts and the minds of every single Catholic out there, regardless of their national heritage, because we need to stand up for them.
And speaking of that, you know, I think one of the key questions that the film leaves viewers with is it ever justified to take up arms in order to protect religious freedom? And I don't know that the film answers that, but I'm wondering if you have an answer to that question from a Catholic perspective.
Well, one thing we need to understand is that, you know, we cannot raise up in arms, because unless it is just, you know, we have a teaching in our faith college, you know, a just war, and you have to be very cautious as to that criteria needs to fall into place, you know, 100% in order for one to take up in arms. And this uprising did not meet the criteria. That's why the bishops could not support this. And can it come to that? Yes, but again, there's a criteria for it. And it is in the, you know, it's in the book that we've just published. There is a lot of questions and answers about this. There's paragraphs that we quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And, you know, so we just need to understand that it is possible, but we have to be very, very sure that we meet that criteria. And it's something that it is a fine line where, you know, as to far how far we can go. But one important element in studying this uprising was that when every peaceful means to repeal this Calles law was exhausted, then the League opted to raise up in arms, because there was just no other way according to their mentality and to the, you know, the vision. Well, one of the things they wanted to do is to, you know, they met with the bishops in order to get their support. And, you know, the bishops, you know, steadfastly, you know, said we cannot stay, you know, support this uprising. It is against our morals, our faith. But there were a couple of comments, because I think they met with them twice, I believe, and all the research that I've done. And at one of these meetings, one of the bishops said, you know, as a bishop, I cannot give you my full support, my blessing, because it goes against our beliefs. He says, but as a human being, I wouldn't bat an eye, I wouldn't even doubt to even sell my possessions, especially my ring, and give you guys those funds in order to fight for this war. He says, but that's me as a human being. As a bishop, I just cannot do that. So, you know, there's that fine line where it's almost almost inevitable. But again, there comes the criteria that we have to meet in order for it to be a justified uprising.
Yeah, and I think the film does a great job too of presenting some peaceful resistance. And ultimately, the film tells the story of a saint. The movie beautifully weaves together the story of two figures from the Cristero Rebellion who never actually met, the story of General Enrique Gorostieta and the story of Blessed Jose Sanchez del Rio. And I think it's really Blessed Jose's story is the one that really sticks with you, isn't it?
Oh, it is incredible. Yes, I see both. There's two. They're both characters. You know, Andy Garcia's Enrique Gorosieta and Mauricio Curi as Jose. You know, Blessed Jose. They both did a phenomenal job. But yeah, I think you got to say the a little Blessed Jose. It really took the cake on that one. He won the crowds over and over. And I know people are really going to enjoy seeing his story out of his love for the church, his martyrdom, and you know his character. The guy was just phenomenal.
Yeah, did that scene for you evoke some aspects of the Passion of the Christ? I know it really did for me.
Oh, by all means, it was almost in contrast to that. You know, you couldn't help but say, you know, there's, you know, it is a tearjerker in certain parts of the film, and especially with what he was going through, you know, under the torture, and you can't yeah. stop and think about that. You know, relate that to the Passion,
yep. just
that courage, and you know, what a blessing to have this kind of young little warrior, this kind of champion and martyr in our history books, you know, for the faith.
Yeah. Well, Ruben, I want to say thank you for taking the time to be with us on Register Radio, and I hope a lot of people will go see the film For Greater Glory this weekend.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I really wanted to continue just to tell people to pray really, really hard for us, for our church, for, you know, especially the persecuted church, wherever it's happening throughout the world. And, of course, you know, to invite everybody to try to obtain a copy of the book. You know, it is in English and Spanish, so they can visit our website. That would be ideal if I could at least let them know that. It's at www.saintjoe.com. And you can get a copy of the book there. And just thank you for passing the word, and hope you guys all get to see it this weekend. We hope that people can really be a little more proud of their Catholic heritage, and especially giving honor to all these martyrs for our faith. And I'd like to close with, you know, Viva Cristo Rey, and may God bless you all.
All right. Thank you so much, Ruben. Tim, we have also covered this movie on both Register Radio and on ncregister.com, right?
If readers would like some additional information about the film or interviews with the cast or a review by Stephen Gradonis, they can find all of that at ncregister.com.
Very good. Thank you, my friend, and thank you for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at The Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.